Medicom Medical Publishers produces peer-reviewed reports and highlights on major medical meetings. We bring the Congress to the physician.
Welcome to this podcast, which is brought to you by Medicom Medical Publishers. Today, I will talk about six of the presentations that were held at the Nordic Lung Congress, which was held from the 1st to the 3rd of June in Copenhagen, Denmark. Enjoy listening.
Thank you to all the healthcare professionals who have worked so hard to bring us through the current pandemic.
So, the first study I would like to discuss is about vaping amongst adolescents. It's a Finnish study, and Dr. Anu Linnansaari of the University of Tampere in Finland presented the results. E-cigarettes have become increasingly popular, especially among young people. This is definitely a reason to be worried, stated Dr. Anu Linnansaari. Adolescent nicotine exposure can induce significant long-term deficits in the developing brain, with an increased risk of impulsive behavior and decreased attention, cognitive impairment, and a negative emotional state. Also, this may carry a 3 times higher increased risk of smoking initiation. Dr. Linnansaari investigated the use and social meaning of vaping among Danish, Finnish, and Norwegian adolescents aged 15 to 20 years old. 4 separate themes were addressed to gain more insights into this practice. The first theme was youth vaping as a social practice, which demonstrated that vaping amongst young people stood as an inherently social practice that was commonly interlinked with experimental and occasional use patterns. Investigating the second theme, appeal of low harm to health showed that e-cigarettes were seen as rather harmless, at least less harmful than ordinary cigarettes and snus. Occasional use and the so-called innocent flavor additives added to this perception. From appeal of product innovation, the third theme, it was made clear that innovative features facilitated new and playful use practices, again with the novelty and appeal of flavors playing a key role. Finally, the fourth theme, youth's digital lives provide new arenas for e-cigarettes, demonstrated that the use of e-cigarettes by young people was integrated into their digital lives. This is made possible by the digital availability of various social media channels, as well as digital information and influence, and the self-presentation of youths on digital platforms. Dr. Linnansaari concluded that considering youth culture, the innovative characteristics of the novel products and the global phenomenon of the tobacco epidemic, it is vital to ensure effective tobacco prevention and healthcare practices such as cessation support. The second study I would like to discuss is about asthma and fertility, which was investigated in the ProArt study. Asthma and infertility are among the most common chronic disorders in young adults. Moreover, women with asthma seem to experience a prolonged time to pregnancy. Also, more asthmatic women need fertility treatment in comparison with other women. Until now, it is not known what the exact mechanism is which may be responsible for the association between asthma and decreased fertility. One of the possible explanations is that asthma-driven systemic inflammation affects the reproductive organs and thereby fertility. To investigate whether the systemic asthma-related inflammation is indeed responsible for the difficulties of asthmatic women in conceiving, the ProArt study was set up. This is an ongoing prospective multicenter randomized controlled clinical trial that aims to determine if treatment with omalizumab prior to fertility treatment will increase the pregnancy rate among women with asthma by decreasing the systemic asthma-related inflammation. The study hypothesizes that the highest pregnancy rate and the shortest time to pregnancy will be seen in those patients with a low degree of inflammation resulting from modifying treatment with biological drugs. The primary endpoint is a difference in pregnancy rate confirmed with ultrasound at gestational week 7 of pregnancy. Researchers aim to include 180 women, and the estimated primary completion date is the 31st of December 2023, with the estimated study completion date 31st of December 2024. Dr. Anna Hansen also pointed out that the role of men should be taken into account, as it is known that sperm count has been decreasing for decades. Could asthma play a role here as well? This needs to be investigated too, to get the full picture. Next, Dr. Emil Wallstedt of the Bispebjerg Hospital in Denmark presented a study about the misdiagnosis of exercise-induced laryngeal obstruction, or EILO. Dr. Wallstedt explained that EILO is caused by the laryngeal structures which temporarily close during vigorous exercise. This phenomenon leads to exertional breathlessness, coughing during or after exercise, a wheezing sound on inspiration, and throat tightness. These symptoms resemble those of asthmatic patients, hence the frequent misdiagnosis. EILO is most frequently diagnosed in adolescents, with more young women than men presenting with the condition. As it is often diagnosed as asthma, patients are prescribed asthma medication such as inhalers. These do not alleviate their symptoms and thus patients are still limited regarding sports and exercise. Dr. Wallstedt recommended taking a detailed history when patients present with the above-mentioned symptoms. This includes a detailed description of episodes of dyspnea, triggers such as exercise, irritants, as well as localization of the complaints, and presentation. Comorbidities should also be considered, such as asthma, dysfunctional breathing, psychiatric disorders, and cardiac disease. EILO should be considered when asthma-like respiratory symptoms do not manifest themselves by using objective tests, when there is inspiratory stridor or snoring, if exercise-induced asthma is suspected, and short-acting beta 2 agonists have little or no effect, or when predictably sets in at a moderate or high exercise intensity. The correct diagnosis is key, but putting the patients at ease is almost as important. Experiencing EILO can be scary, said Dr. Wallstedt. When patients know what is wrong and that they will not suffocate, this can help them to accept it and help them deal with their condition. Unnecessary therapy should be stopped. Patients often receive asthma medication, but they do not need it. Treatments for EILO include respiratory training, speech therapy, inspiratory muscle training, and surgery in patients with predominantly supraglottic obstruction. The fourth topic of today considers a Finnish study that assessed the preoperative risk factors for transbronchial lung cryobiopsy complications in patients with interstitial lung disease, or ILD. Not much is known about the preoperative risk factors associated with transbronchial lung cryobiopsy, or TBLC, complications. Therefore, a study evaluating the preoperative risk factors of clinically significant complications of TBLC in patients with ILD was initiated. The study also aimed to describe the Finnish TBLC procedure and report complication rates and diagnostic yield. A total of 100 patients with a median age of 66.1 years, and of whom 60 were men, were recruited between January 2015 and December 2019. The inclusion criteria consists of a referral for suspected ILD and a requirement of histologic investigation in the diagnosis of the ILD. Patients who had an acute myocardial infarct, acute or untreated heart disease, or active tuberculosis were excluded from the study, as were patients who were on anticoagulation treatment that could not be withheld, and those with abnormal bleeding history or bleeding parameters and a BMI above 30 kilos per square meter. High-resolution CT scans and Leicester cuff questionnaire were obtained before the TBLC. Medication, including oral corticosteroid use within 30 days before TBLC, was recorded. The diagnoses were concluded in a multidisciplinary meeting. TBLC and bronchoalveolar lavage were performed in an operating room in an outpatient setting. Of the 100 patients, 68 had no or mild complications, whereas 32 had clinically significant complications. None of the participants died within 30 days after TBLC. Two died within 90 days of the TBLC. The diagnostic yield was 87% and inter-observer agreement on honeycombing was kappa is 0.66, on emphysema kappa is 0.70, and on traction bronchiectasis kappa is 0.44. It was concluded that a history of severe cough was associated with pneumothorax, whilst oral corticosteroid use within 30 days before the TBLC may be associated with complications, even though the result did not reach statistical significance. According to the researchers, limitations of the study include a rather small population and the use of backward, stepwise elimination method, which can be considered as hypothesis generating. However, the covariates in this model were carefully selected before the analysis to increase the reliability of the model and to reduce noise variables. There was also a talk about physical activity for asthma patients and how that affects asthma control. Dr. Morten Hostrup of the University of Copenhagen in Denmark emphasized that people with asthma should be physically active. A systematic review and meta-analysis of 11 randomized controlled trials assessing the effects of aerobic exercise training for 8 weeks or longer showed that this type of exercise, including walking, jogging, spinning, and treadmill running, can potentially improve asthma control and lung function. However, it does not have any effect on airway inflammation. Exercise combined with a high protein, low glycemic index diet in non-obese asthma patients leads to improved asthma control compared to only diet or only exercise. Nevertheless, this combination does not affect airway hyperresponsiveness or airway inflammation. Dr. Hostrup also pointed out that aerobic exercise training effectively improves asthma outcomes in persons with obesity and that this effect may be larger in women. For those asthma patients wishing to engage in very vigorous training, such as high-intensity interval training, Dr. Hostrup stated that they could safely do so, but should keep a short-acting beta-2 agonist nearby. High-intensity interval training has demonstrated to effectively improve maximal oxygen consumption and peak power output in asthma patients who are untrained, regardless of the individual levels of asthma control, forced expiratory volume in 1 second, fraction of exhaled nitric oxide, and airway hyperresponsiveness. Finally, I would like to summarize a talk about the effect of social distancing during the pandemic on exacerbations in bronchiectasis patients. The COVID-19 pandemic highly influenced the lives of everyone, and in particular of patients living with lung disease. For instance, it is known that social distancing, which was introduced to curb the spread of COVID-19, led to a reduction in exacerbation risk for COPD patients. Also, respiratory viral-associated exacerbations decreased. Although this may be regarded as a beneficial effect of the imposed social distancing measurements, the downside was that patients experienced an increased sense of loneliness due to social distancing. If this was the case for COPD patients, what would the effect of the pandemic and its measures be in patients with bronchiectasis? Vestergaard et al. Conducted a study on 306 Danish patients using the Bronchiectasis Health Questionnaire, which featured 10 questions. The median age of the participants was 68 years, and 68% of participants were women. The mean number of exacerbations declined from December 2020 to February 2021 to rise again in the period between September and November 2021, increasing until May 2022. Differences in the number of antibiotics used for the past 12 months, with December 2020, February 2021 being the reference group, showed a substantially lower p-value in the periods September-November 2021 and December 2021-February 2022, with a p of 0.052 and a p-value of 0.003 respectively. Regarding coughing bouts and phlegm in the chest, no significant reduction was observed over the various periods. No correlation between the sense of anxiousness and social distancing could be found in the study.
This podcast was produced by Medicom Medical Publishers.